Malcolm Honlein is with us. We call it the Weekly Update, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. You know the topic that is certainly on everybody's mind, and with all the news that happened this week, this might be the number one story in the Jewish world of the week, and that's the statement by the President of the United States. Difficult to decipher what his threat and action actually means. That's why we have you on to explain that. Your reaction to President Biden and the conditions he has now set on providing certain military aid to Israel.
I thought the issue was the Rangers. I didn't realize that you were. It's very hard to explain, because it's both inconsistent and inexplicable in some regards, that when a country that is one of your closest allies is in a war situation, you don't publicly undermine and threaten only to serve the purposes of Hamas and to send a message to our friends that we are not a reliable ally, and especially when they believe that Israel is in a special place, and we always talk about the special relationship, and that the that if Israel can't rely on the United States, what chance do they have? That's one. Two, that the Hamas raised the terms for the negotiations because they realized that Israel's ability to go into Rafah, or believed that their ability to accomplish their goals in Rafah, would be limited. Israel says they have the weapons to do what they need to. They have enough stockpiles of bombs and other equipment. But when you're demanding that they do more to limit civilian casualties, and you take away the guidance systems that and precision bombs and leave them to more bombs that have less control systems, meaning that the likelihood of collateral damage increases, it doesn't make sense. Also, the members of Congress have overwhelmingly approved the sale of these weapons. I believe that this is a policy that has been in place for longer than the president's announcement. And whether the intention was to simply a shot across the bow, as some have tried to say, that that means that they ignore the implications, because once words like this get out, you can't retract them. It creates an impression. It's a message in Gaza, in the West Bank, in the region. And I'm sure, I know that Iran applauded the statement for good reason, because it serves their ultimate goals and that of their proxies in the Ring of Fire around Israel. So clearly it was very disappointing, very certainly people legitimately angry about the statement. And, you know, what is important is not always that platitudinous declarations that we hear, but as the Italians say, look at the hands, not the mouth, that you got to see what they do. And while in the UN and other places we see the United States still stand with Israel and the declarations remain, look at the reaction of members of Congress, including Democrats, who have stood against the progressive wing, which seems to be increasingly influential in this situation, and leads to the kind of conclusions that we've seen.
Well, if in fact we're going to laud those Republicans and Democrats who have come out on the right side of this issue, then we have to criticize Senator Schumer. It's one thing that he publicly weeks ago went ahead and spoke about how the future of Israel is dependent on Benjamin Netanyahu leaving office or being voted out. But now he doubled down on a policy that is simply in place to help defend Israel from its enemies. And you have to be, and I would assume all Jewish leadership that cares about Israel, is very disappointed that he even made any comment, certainly a negative one in this regard.
Well, certainly he's heard from all of us, and I think that the speech, as I said at the time, that the damage would be longer term because it opened the floodgate and legitimized the actions of some of the more extreme with whose positions he doesn't necessarily agree with. But he gives license as the highest-ranking Jew elected official by virtue of his comments. And I think the silence of some others is also disturbing. But if you look at the facts on the ground, you have to raise questions about what's the wisdom behind this policy. If they believe that this is going to win Michigan or Wisconsin, and that and that's the two-state solution they're talking about, then it's wrong.
That's
because
funny.
Because the polls that was done by Harvard, and I spoke on air with the professor who did this study, and he's been monitoring this on an ongoing basis. Amongst 18 to 25-year-olds, 57% believe that they should go into Rafah. Amongst total population, almost 80%. Or 70-some percent, because almost 80% of the older adults.
Yeah, those on the other, those on the other side are just much louder. I mean, we see, like, on the college campuses.
But,
I mean,
but they are a minority, and we don't believe that.
Right, because of
the
violence.
What do you see? What does the media play up?
Right.
And that the silent majority that we always speak about is more than evident in this. I could understand why Americans, because of the way the coverage and the, you know, with the demonstrations and everything, and hearing only the one side, that the that they would have a biased attitude. But the fact is that they see through this. But it's the 18 to 25-year-olds, when they are asked, they rank Middle East as 16th on the list of priorities. Less than 1% of Biden voters say the Middle East is the reason that will determine their vote. I can give you a dozen more statistics that show that as a political strategy, it isn't wise. And as you know, the stories have come out about certain people in the administration who are holding key positions in policy-related positions, that the and that one of them was a founder of original founder of SJP, the Students for Justice in Palestine, and you know, then you see that there are possibilities that people are feeding this poison into the system. We have to look at all aspects of this, but just for American interest, for America's policy. What do you think the Houthis think now about their attacks on shipping? Is it because of Israel? Why would they attack ships of every kind? Why would Iran continue to fund and expand their activities in areas beyond the Middle East, everywhere where they take advantage of any opening, even though their economy is in collapse? But together, working with China and Russia, building a new front, we are undermining America's security and America's long-term interests.
Yeah. By the way, do I have permission to use the two-state solution line? It's a great one.
Yeah, okay, you can. Yes.
All right, so look, you know President Biden for a very long time. And I know times are different. I'm sure, you know, situations were much different in the 1970s and 80s than they are today. But because of social media, there is some benefit to social media. And that is that certain things that are said years ago don't go away. And many of us are familiar with the clip of Menachem Begin's reaction to when Biden threatened holding back military aid to Israel. And we're going back 40 years now, obviously, maybe even more than 40 years. I mean, you probably remember that whole exchange when it actually happened. So is it, you know, everyone talks about Obama and President Obama's influence on this administration. I don't know. I don't think we need to throw President Obama under the bus. It seems that President Biden has had some type of obsession or fascination with this whole issue for decades. What do you think?
He certainly considers himself a devoted and dedicated friend. I think most Israeli leaders considered him a friend. He is sometimes given to these kind of statements, the one that triggered Menachem Begin's response. But if you look overall at his record of 40 years or more that I've known him, he generally was very supportive. He was chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee and considered himself a great friend of Israel, and had very close connections to the Jewish community, including his own grandchildren. But, you know, we have to look at what the situation is today. Who's influencing him? What does he really mean? Why did he throw in artillery shells, not just the 5,000 and the 500 and 2,000-pound bombs, but he also mentioned artillery shells. And that is a whole different category. But overall, what he was addressing, the things that would be needed to go into Rafah, and Israel has not gone into it. Hasn't happened yet. They talk about it as if this is the invasion. It is not. This is only preliminary.
What have they done so far? Because they have destroyed certain things. They have discovered tunnels. So what has happened so far?
These are all targeted actions, very limited in scope. And they took over the crossing, which is really vital because weapons are being smuggled across the Philadelphia line and from Egypt. There are many tunnels under the border from Egypt to Gaza, and smuggling goes on there of weapons and other things, but also of goods, and supposedly amounts to billions of dollars in trade, which means that a lot of people are being paid off on both sides of that border. And so they resisted destroying all those tunnels, even though Egypt at one time flooded tunnels and not that long ago and did take action against some of them. But these remain intact because they believe many police and other officials are paid off as well and are benefiting from the take on the trade. So Israel has taken that, and that's symbolically very important but also tactically significant. And the actions against certain individuals and against targeted places. Unfortunately, the toll continues to grow in terms of Israel, and I think today we will learn of more casualties. It's heartbreaking when you see the people who are dying in defense of Israel. But go willingly, go enthusiastically, and understand, as do virtually all Israelis, and the American people. That's why those statistics should not be dismissed, that regardless of the barrage of hostile media coverage and listening to the demonstrators, and when they ask them any question of substance, none of them can answer it. You know, it's a false narrative. Get out of my face. Don't ask me those questions. They don't know. It's not because it's an educated demonstration that's dealing with a human rights violations. So they never talk about the Hamas violations. They never talk about the other side. So I think it's remarkable that the American people get it to the degree they do. But their understanding is that Israel has started the war in Rafah. It is not. This is preliminary steps.
And and we should also note, and by the way, Memorial Day is Monday, and it's going to be a very different Yom HaZikaron this year than in past years. Obviously, there's so many fresh wounds and terrible trauma in Israel, as one can imagine. And again, it's not just Gaza. We saw what happened in Kerem Shalom. We saw the drone attacks that took two lives up north this week. I mean, obviously, the entire country is still under attack by the enemy, depending on the situation. But we need to note one thing, and you have to tell me if I'm right about this. Egypt has been pretty silent. You know, Israel has started, as you just described, the Rafah operation is at the stage that it's at right now. But the rest of the world, set aside President Biden for a moment, has been pretty quiet about it. What you've always said about Egypt being enthusiastic that Israel take care of business there seems to be the case.
Well, first of all, every Arab country wants Israel to do it. They have to worry about public opinion, especially Egypt. I think that Israel has clarified every move that they were making to Egyptian officials.
Wow.
That's why they've been going back and forth and continue to make Cairo the center for negotiations, which raises their status in the Arab world. And Egypt knows, bottom line, this is in their interest. There isn't an Arab leader who doesn't want to see Israel finish the job.
Yep.
They don't want to see mass casualties, which then creates a backlash. But Egypt has cracked down on the demonstrations inside their countries. And so has Iran, by the way. But the demonstrations there are pro-Israel, and including people hanging flags from bridges and many other things against something that the press won't discuss. Egypt has, I think, tried to pursue a balanced position. They will be critical of Israel, but so far they seem to be cooperating.
How crazy a world are we in that the greatest opponent of the week to Israel's actions is the United States? It's crazy when you think about it.
Well, you have others. The Europeans are always on that side of the equation.
But they made a point of it this
United
week.
States, we face a very serious situation in the ICC, the International Criminal Court, and we need U.S. support there. But U.S. could be easily targeted as well. So fighting these things, whether it's the International Court of Justice, International Criminal Court, and I know people don't know what these things are, but the International Criminal Court is considering sanctions against which essentially war crime charges against leaders in Israel, which means they couldn't travel, and that, that could have implications for others. We also have today the possibility of a unilateral declaration of recognition of a Palestinian state in the General Assembly, where there is no veto, but eventually I think it has to come back to the Security Council. People don't seem to be sure of what the process is, but American law says if they move ahead with even a unilateral declaration, we pull all our money from there.
Is that scheduled to happen today at the UN?
Well, today is a likely or possible day. It was a targeted day. It could be that we'll go till Monday. It could be that the counter pressures will be exerted, but the vote is there no matter what. It's overwhelming. And it doesn't, because the General Assembly alone cannot make that declaration, you need the Security Council ultimately, but it will go first to the parliamentarian in the Secretary General's office. It goes through other stages.
Right.
And we believe in the Security Council. It won't, and it's a very bad precedent, by the way, we could start seeing a slew of countries then get unilateral declarations. But it will have implications. I mean, it's not without significance.
Pay careful attention to which countries are on the minority on that vote. Pay careful attention to that. Hard to believe that the minority would be the side that we're supporting, but hey, this is the reality when it comes to action against Israel, especially at the UN. It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio. Around the world, the web at NahumSiegel.com and the Nahum Siegel Network, and of course, on the beloved NSN app. Don't forget Monday, Yom HaZikaron, presented by our friends at the Rothenberg Law Firm, InjuryLawyer.com. Rothenberg Law Firm stands with Israel and, of course, our IDF soldiers. They'll also be presenting our Tuesday broadcast, the Yom HaTzmaut special. Also, go to the top at NahumSiegel.com. Our Lag BaOmer raffle has been announced. 10 prizes, including a trip to Israel. Only 360 tickets are being sold. It's a fun method. For those of you who don't get it yet, go to the top at NahumSiegel.com, click on the banner, support us, and hopefully you'll be a winner. Before I ask you about the hostage deal situation, I want to do something on this side of the world for a moment. I'm sure you saw the hearing in Washington and leaders of different school districts that were called in to answer questions. And much more milder session, in my opinion, than when the Ivy League and other prominent college presidents were being grilled in Washington. Why do you think that is so?
Well, I think that Mr. Banks got a pretty tough grilling. But, high schools are seen as different. It's not quite the same magnitude that we're talking about in terms of influx of money, although foreign money as well impacting the high schools, as we saw here in Queens and New York. And I think that they needed to get additional information so they could ask about some of the specific instances and also about discriminatory measures that are taking place both against students and against faculty. This is a nationwide phenomenon. We have so much evidence about what is really happening in our high schools and even in elementary schools. And we saw pictures this week in St. Louis of nursery kids marching. And this is not a Queens phenomenon. This is a New York phenomenon that they're targeting K-12, which is frankly smart, because then time to get to campus, they're already yours, and you can feed them any lie, any distortion, any misrepresentation. The teaching them about Israel to these little children who are easily impressionable, and then go out and yell free Palestine, and it's not to be dismissed. The Catholic Church says give me a child till he's six, you can keep them the rest of their lives, because that is when you influence, when you implant the seeds of the views that they hold for their lives. So this is only beginning of an issue, but the fact is that those things have to be dealt with on a city or a state level. Universities, we're talking about federal law that is involved in terms, for instance, of foreign funding, and watch in the next day or days the releases that will come out about the issues I've hinted at, about finding out where the money is coming from, and some people will be surprised, although there have been hints at it, but the degree and the amounts that we're talking about, and that it's coming from other countries other than Qatar, although continues to be from Qatar as well. Yeah. This is so significant in terms of the implications about how many of the demonstrators are being paid, how all of a sudden, you know, all the tents that are the same, and so many things about the control over what's happening and whether it will continue. So many of the people arrested are agitators from off the campus, and that many of them were getting paid. I saw one report that they were getting $7,000 for a full day's work or non-work. It's so broad and so intense. We're working on this. And every time, you know, you lift up one thing and think that you've got it covered, one issue, all of a sudden it covers a whole nother spectrum of issues and complications and challenges. And you see now faculty carrying out demonstrations at the new school. The encampment is faculty. When you see the faculty line up on the steps of a library, when you see them encouraging and holding the classes in the encampments, doing other things, the problem goes to that, and that should be a subject of another congressional hearings. But the hearings are important because they shed light on it. You see the people stammering in their responses because they either haven't faced up to these issues or don't know enough about what's going on in their own school systems. And there has to be clear action, like you see in Florida, like you see in other places, that there has to be zero tolerance for this. We wouldn't tolerate teaching racism against other groups in our schools. Why is it permissible when it comes to Israel and the Jewish people?
And on the other issue on this side of the world, you mentioned earlier the polls and the reality, especially among the youth, and who believes we should go into Rafah and who supports Israel, etc. And of course, I was enthusiastic to learn this because we're watching the violence on campus and the terrible episodes on so many campuses nationwide. And you think, because of the media coverage, as you pointed out, you think that that's, you know, that everybody's like that, so to speak. I have to assume that the campaigns, especially the campaign for the Democratic candidate for president, the incumbent for president of the United States, has seen the same polls and is aware of the same numbers, and therefore would know that Michigan's not going to flip if they go ahead and withhold arms from Israel, and that in reality, the border and crime and the economy are bigger issues than this might be. I mean, this is what scares me. The actions of the campaign, in this case, the actions of the incumbent, would indicate that they know something we don't know.
Well, first of all, you have to look at the internal dynamics, and Michigan could it's not going to flip. It is a Democratic state,
right?
And it's not about to become a Republican state.
Right.
But they take it very seriously. They take the threats because you have a progressive wing in the Democratic Party of 100 members of Congress, and you saw that some of the Democratic Jewish organizations came out against the president's declaration, although the National Jewish Democratic Council endorsed it. But even some groups that are associated with it, like the Policy Forum and others, came out criticizing what the president did, because I think they're reading where the American Jewish community is, where their constituents really are. And it is, if what's motivating them is the belief that this is going to satisfy that those 100 members of Congress and the progressive wing, they're making a mistake, because you can't satisfy them unless we break all ties with Israel, unless we really sabotage our relationship with them, until we declare a Palestinian state, until we do everything which will undermine American security, our relationship with all the countries in the region who don't trust us, because if they believe that they can all, if Israel can be sacrificed on the altar of political expediency, their interests will certainly be. And the opportunities are there. I mean, why aren't we doing more to pressure Iran instead of cajoling with sanctions? So it's really a critical moment, and it should not be a Democratic, Republican, issue, conservative, liberal. It has to be a unified stance by the American people to understand what's really at stake. And if we are working now more with influencers and others, I met with a group yesterday who are trying to help get out the message to people, at least in our own community. Right. And your listeners know and understand, but how many of them have written to the White House? Simple email message to the White House, to Schumer, to other elected officials, both positive and negative. Thank the good guys. Always do that. But also express your concerns in responsible and effective ways. You know, I still think the president cares about Israel. I think I don't understand what motivated I do, but to a degree. But, you know, there's an inconsistency in terms of America's national interest.
Right.
To make that declaration.
And someone has to tell Senator Schumer and others, I'm not picking on him this second, but someone's got to tell him that that there's no satisfying the squad. What you just said is so important. No matter what, you know, the old, you know, give an inch, get a, you know, they'll take a mile.
Yeah.
There's just no satisfying them. And I don't know, in the long term, when you think about what's best for the party, best for America, best for the, you know, relationship between the United States and Israel, it just seems it's a backwards way of progressing. Excuse the term. All right. So now it looked so close. And frankly, I mean, this is a personal feeling. I don't think there should be any discussion unless every hostage is included in a deal. But all right. You know, I'm not a diplomat and I'm not a military expert. And I certainly don't have the job of prime minister. But it looked like they were so close to some type of deal this week. And I thought the Rafah offensive would only make the Hamas leadership blink and be more anxious to make a deal. Where do things stand now?
Well, the Israeli and Hamas delegations left Cairo, but the talks in Cairo are supposedly continuing. And as you know, the Hamas revised, without notifying Israel, the conditions when they said that they had accepted it. It was a sham, like everything else they do. And then they're talking about returning dead bodies, not just live ones, as part of the numbers. And Israel obviously said that's ridiculous. I mean, we, this was not what they negotiated. And all of a sudden they were confronted by a very different agreement than what they were given. And the United States had said that Israel had made a very generous offer and really stepped up to the plate in ways that some in Israel, you know, objected. But Israel's first obligation is to try and return the people that are hostages.
Right.
And to these families have suffered so much. The hostages, one can't imagine what all these months in these horrific conditions have done. But Israel also has to look at its security and it can't be held hostage to the hostage situation alone. Many people believe they should have done it right away. They could have been more aggressive steps. I can't second guess that. I don't know enough to do that. What I know is that it's heartbreaking and it's got to be a priority. But at the same time, if Hamas is allowed to emerge with those battalions intact in Rafah, and if they can tomorrow go out and hold a parade with Sinwar at the head, it will undermine and minimize the losses and the casualties that paid the ultimate price willingly. And then anybody who has been down to the south and seen the troops, the enthusiasm, the commitment, the patriotism, the heroism is so beyond our understanding because we haven't experienced it. It's so remarkable. So the situation is, you know, the hostages, we have to try to get them out. We don't know how many are alive. We don't know how many are dead. The Hamas is playing games with us all the time, and we should have already made sure that Qatar kicked them out of Qatar. We should have taken steps to remove Qatar from the major non-NATO allies. I mean, there are punishments and things that we should be implementing now to put the pressure on to make sure that they return it. Instead of always putting the pressure on Israel, you see that the trucks are backed up and, you know, there was more food than they could take in many of the regions, most of the regions. And, you know, the idea that there's famine, the idea of the number of deaths is just ridiculous.
And what's with the emergency pier that the U.S. is supposed to be building? They just can't get it done?
It's done. The first shipment is supposed to come, I think, even today from Cyprus. And you know that it was shelled by Hamas. Where's the international condemnation of that? And that Israeli troops are stationed there to guard it, and then others are responsible for taking the goods and bringing it in, because obviously Israeli troops can't. But the pier is being built because it was seen as an alternative, and Israel acquiesced to it. It was as a gesture, and they may reach an agreement that the goods coming in through Cyprus would be stopped in Cyprus where they could inspect it and make sure they're not smuggling weapons. But when you see the lineup of trucks from Jordan, from others that are, you know, there were demonstrations that held them up in Israel, and you could see dozens and dozens of these trailer trucks lined up as far as the eye could see, even. And you know, I wonder what inspection process you have of all of these. But the idea that there's famine and for months, 6 months more, we've heard every day, oh, it's on the edge of famine, and the UN agency saying it's a famine, and there's no famine. And so just as the numbers are a lie about the casualties, the numbers on this are a lie, and the world media has been complicit in this regard.
What was the largest number you heard this week in terms of the possibility of a hostage release? Was it 35 or in that area? Is that basically the number they've been working with throughout
the 30s? But, you know, it was staggered. And also they changed it to say either people or the bodies of hostages.
Yeah. Yom HaZikaron, Israel Memorial Day, this coming Monday. Malcolm, this one's going to be very different than in past years.
Absolutely.
And, of course, who knows what Israel Independence Day is going to be like. I'm sure people will be encouraged to celebrate, but I would assume that the celebrations and the ceremonies will have some type of tempered atmosphere to it, right?
They'll be very muted. The candle, the torch lighting, to which I was actually invited this year, but it's going to be virtual. It's not going to be a real gathering.
Wow.
And people, I think, are going to moderate the celebrations. They should celebrate. We still should thank God for having the state and for pay tribute, especially on Yom HaZikaron, to all of those who fell and all the additional people who fell. I understand that they're going to limit the number of people at cemeteries because, unfortunately, we have so many more, and whom this is the first year that they will be able to go and to visit those graves. So I think it'll be very muted.
And earlier in this conversation, you alluded to the fact, and look, you know, frankly, you know information earlier than the rest of us generally, and you alluded to the fact that today could be a tough day in terms of hearing certain news out of the Rafah operation. I think it's important to remind everybody just how dangerous a situation our soldiers are in throughout all of these operations, even the ones that the media seems to paint as overwhelmingly offensive by Israel. They have their lives on the line every second of a new, and if you think discovering a new tunnel doesn't come with, I can only imagine how many challenges, whether it's booby traps or collapses or anything else, you have another thing coming. So what I know that I'm overstating the obvious, but I think based on what you said earlier, we need to keep in mind the type of sacrifice they're making, especially with Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut coming up.
Absolutely.
And I thank you, and I what can I say? We pray for the hostages. 31 Shabbatot, 31 full Shabbatot this will be. I really thought there would be some hope this week that there would be some type of release, but who knows? As we know, Yeshua is Hashem Karavai, and it could happen in just a matter of a second, and we hope that, in fact, all of the good news comes to us very, very quickly. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Have a good Shabbos.
And we'll speak to you next week. Lots of serious stuff to be considering, folks, and a lot of things to pray for. Keep in mind our brothers and sisters who are hostages. Keep in mind our brothers and sisters who are IDF soldiers and are serving in these situations that are dangerous second to second. Literally, their world can change at a moment's notice. And I know, again, that's overstating the obvious, but we don't realize just how many precarious situations the average soldier in these types of operations are in constantly as these types of offensives and operations are going on. And Monday, Yom HaZikaron, have rachmanis on our friends, family, relatives, acquaintances, associates, brothers and sisters, and the collective term that are going through these fresh wounds, this fresh trauma of now being part of a family that has a fallen soldier. Yom HaZikaron, Israel Memorial Day, is going to be quite a serious day. It always is, but even more so this year. And as you heard Malcolm say, Tuesday is going to be a bit different. Won't be the exact type of Israel Independence Day celebration for year number 76, for anniversary number 76. But nonetheless, we as a people have an opportunity to exhibit our resilience and our hope for the future with a little bit of a celebration on Tuesday, celebrating 76 years of the State of Israel.